Hi, I'm Troy Bronsink, and this is From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. This episode has two parts, a conversation and a guided meditation. We're connecting you to a variety of contemplative teachers, hearing their story, as well as sharing a meditative practice. So if you don't have time right now to hear their story, just look at the show notes for when the meditation portion begins. Feel free to skip ahead. We've also learned from our first several episodes that there's this challenge between moving from the passive participant listening to an interview and sitting for a guided meditation. And since this is all about you developing your own practice, we've developed something called Pocket Practices, where you can download just the meditation portion on your own. Today's portion with Mickey Scott Bay Jones has a kind of hypnotic kind of role to it. She used to be a doula, so she advised that we not listen to this and operate any heavy machinery. Today we do talk with Mickey Scott Bay Jones. She's a justice doula. She works with justice leaders and activists and faith communities to sustain their work. In our discussion, she talks about the importance of contemplation held as a community, like it's something we hold organically in ways that include nature, that include chanting, that include ways that honor the faith traditions they come from and still make these practices your own. Now, you could be doing a million different things right now while listening to this podcast. You might be trimming the honeysuckle or pouring a sidewalk or cutting some potatoes for dinner. That said, why don't you stop for a second and look around you and just take a couple deep breaths and enjoy listening in. Hopefully you'll be able to sit and meditate with us in the second half. Well, today we're excited to join Mickey Scott Bay Jones, and a justice doula, a former dancer, you're probably still a dancer, a bunch of other amazing things. I'm excited to have this conversation today. Thanks for joining us, Mickey.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. So where are we reaching you right now? Where are you?
That's a funny question. I talked to my mother this morning and she was like, so when are you going out again? I feel like I live half the time on the road, but I'm in my home in Spring Hill, Tennessee, which is just south of Nashville.
Oh, there we go. Cool. Well, you know, I'm excited for us to get into this conversation together. What we've learned in the last several episodes is that it's just kind of fun to hear a little bit about your own kind of work, how your contemplative practice influences that work. And then we'll look forward at the end of the time to you guiding us in a practice yourself. So just to kind of get started, I mean, so justice doula, help give a little framework. What does it mean to be engaged the way you are socially and in the world, and to see that as a midwifery?
Yeah. So for many years, I was a birth doula. So it was my job to, I was a birth doula, lactation consultant, childbirth educator, the whole thing, a mother baby specialist, if
gotcha.
You will.
Uh-huh.
And so I had my own business. I served moms all over Middle Tennessee. And my job as a birth doula was to help moms birth and their families birth more new life into the world. And the skills, the lessons of welcoming life into the world as that support person, as a doula, which is really just the way we currently talk about offering support to people who are birthing. Mm. This is an ancient tradition. Women have always surrounded other women as they've brought new life into the world. And so I transitioned into kind of more theology and getting back into kind of community development work, I realized that I was bringing all those skills into my justice work. Mm. And so those skills and the knowledge and the experience of helping people birth something, now I'm just helping them birth more love, justice, and shalom into the world.
There we go.
Yeah.
Do you feel like just to parse words and play with it a little bit, do you feel like you're midwifing the midwife for these activists that are doing the work? Do you feel like you're a midwife to the work, like to the appearance of justice?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I would like separate it out just a little bit in that, like, the way I say it is that midwives are in charge of making sure everybody gets out alive. I'm not interested in that kind of responsibility.
There we go.
And doulas are the ones that provide the support, all the non-medical aspects, right? So wiping the brow, telling the person over and over they can do it, getting them water, making sure they're fed and hydrated, making sure that the support people to the mother, the partner, the grandma, that they know where to stand and how to massage and how to be and when to get out of her way. And so as a justice doula, I am helping other people through my focus on healing justice, which is everything from like healing circles to movement chaplaincy, through kind of this focus on bringing people together across divides, bridging across divides. That's the kind of work that builds resilience and creates healing.
Come on.
So that people can do the work, right? I have been an organizer. I can do that kind of work, but because of my kind of where I am in life as a mom of three kids and kind of just my, where I live in the world, like living in a small Southern town and kind of my gifts and talents, I'm not necessarily going to be the one out front in an action or planning the action from start to finish. But I am the one who's going to be saying, so have we thought about what we're going to do with people who show up with their kids? Have we thought, do we have water? Are we planning the meeting at a time when people are going to need to eat? It seems like everybody is kind of pissed off right now. Do we need to do some work with our group before we start planning something? Right. So that's how my brain works.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that I think about, is how do we get people to be able to stay in this work long term? How do we meet their needs? How do we help them keep pushing through to birth that justice? That's my work.
There we go. So yeah, you're singing my song. So this sustaining of the work, it's in the rapidness of media, it feels already old to be saying this, but it's not. It's only been a few months. And I can remember, and this has come up a couple times here in our podcast, the nature of things after the election, the sense of surprise, some of the shock, some of the fear, some of the kind of like real lack of communication between people who had different desires for those outcomes. All of that came out, it felt like there was a suffering that was more visible, and there was a tendency by a lot of folks to be able to, like a desire to fix it. And the idea of like, can we fix it, or are we stuck for 4 years not fixing it? And it created, it kind of unfolded into like, how will we deal with this pain and suffering? Will we be long suffering, or are we demanding immediate fixes? And do we have the stamina to stick with it? So, I mean, for you to describe it as a birthing process, you know, of course. And you and I share a similar tradition in the text of Old and New Testament scriptures, and like just the sense of the longing of the earth for this to be born. I guess what I'm curious about, I would love to hear you share a little more with me and the audience, is how compare that birthing metaphor to a metaphor of violence or conquest when it comes to doing justice. But birthing isn't a placid experience, and yet it seems more unitive and less binary, less either or.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes we, you know, romanticize birthing in that it's always going to be a good outcome, or that the parents or the mother will always feel good about what has happened when she has her baby in her arms. But having witnessed and supported many births, it isn't automatically a good situation or a process that the mother feels happy about or feels like you know, she came through in a good manner. So, you know, it's not just about the end, right? Our struggle for justice is not just about, okay, well, you know, now we got fair wages, so it's all good. You know, the process that we use to get there can determine how we feel about it in the end.
There we go.
And so, you know, we there are many ways that you can end up going through the birthing process. A woman can, yes, end up with her baby at the end, but the whole time she was degraded by the nurses. She felt a lack of choices. She was this, this, and this, and this, right? And so, you know, this has recently come up with the sanctuary movement. People have been debating, right, how much we talk about the stories, because a lot of times churches are like, well, in order to do this, we have to tell the story of the person who's taking sanctuary. And the person in that's taking sanctuary in the church is saying, whoa, 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 no, I get to tell my story the way I want to tell it when I'm ready to tell it.
Wow.
I don't just have to be a prop for you, or you don't get to tell my story. And I understand the churches are like, they for legal reasons, they feel like they have to be able to share the story. So sometimes in an effort to get to the end, right, to get to a point where we're changing things about immigration, we end up actually hurting the person whose behalf we're working on. So
because of an attachment to the outcome.
Right.
Yeah.
So how do we actually make it so that it's good? So we're doing something that's good all the way along.
There we go. It's about the birth and the baby. Not
absolutely.
There we go. So I'd like to turn then, take that same round and take it a little tighter and ask, what about your practice enables you to differentiate between the birth and the baby? What is it in the kind of your approach to your daily centering? Whatever that's like, it'd be interesting to know what that's like. But then, how does that then inform some of those decisions when you are supporting those the mothers that are part of the movement?
Well, you know, the way that I have gotten into this, as many people's stories are, is that I had my own experience with severe stress and burnout when I was doing mother baby work, and had a pretty legit nervous breakdown. I mean, it was really bad.
Wow.
And I knew, you know, the night I poured a bottle of pills down the sink so that I wouldn't take them, I knew I had to change. And it was affecting my child. You know, the way I was treating myself, pushing and pushing and pushing myself and never resting, never taking a break, never making family time, always just striving to get to that point where I could somehow take a break because I would have reached this imaginary, you know, achievement. But, you know, capitalism always moves the carrot, right? So I was never going to get there. And so that is when I said, you know, I can't live like this. And I knew better because I knew, you know, I could encourage mothers who are, again, birthing a baby to rest. I knew, I learned over the years as a doula that my most important tools were my heart and my hands. I didn't need all the stuff. I used to carry a big bag with massagers and oils and books and all the tricks of the trade. And in my later years as a doula, my bag was full of a change of clothes, plenty of food, water, things that I needed for myself to be able to care for them well. And so my personal practice is about my own care so that when times of intensity do come, you know, if I'm hydrated and well-fed and rested, when it's time to go, I'm ready to go. When it's time for a push, I'm ready for a push. But if I don't take care of myself, then I'm not ready. I don't have any reserves to pull from. I'm already so exhausted that I'm halfway falling asleep when I'm trying to be there for somebody else, when I'm trying to participate in something that somebody has asked me to participate in.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have to work on sustaining myself on the regular, and I don't always do a good job of it. You know, I really I really struggle because I am a serious worker. I like to get things done. I'd love a good to-do list. You know, I have multiple. I mean, you know, I'm a recovering multitasker. I love to do things, 10 things at once. Like, I don't watch movies. Yeah. You know, like I'm just a person who just is go, go, go. But I've had to learn to embrace the things that help me to pace myself, so that I can actually learn from the other things in life that aren't necessarily pegged as something that you can learn from.
Oh, there we go. So I'm curious here. So the two different kind of archetypes come to mind here that I'd be curious if you have any stories of interacting with folks from this space you're talking about, from the sufficiently restored space so that you're ready to push when it's time to push, and able to say no when you need to say no. We run into a lot of these folks at the Hive. I'm sure you run into them a lot in your work. There's some folks for whom the urgency of the work is so all-consuming that just to hear you or I or somebody talk about that long run, it triggers in them like a blame, right? Like, and having my own variation on burnout, that I just kind of go like, I'm not offended by them summing me up or judging me that way, but on the other hand, I also know where that's coming from, right? I recognize it. So that's one side, and then the other side is if we had just took a clip from what you just shared, it could sound a little bit like a self-help book in the Amazon self-help section of just like, you know, put on your life mask first, and like this kind of sense of spend a little more pampering time, and those folks who don't really know other than, you know, the quick enthusiasm of a Facebook campaign, how to engage and stay engaged. So those are kind of two different types of folks. And I'm sure in my own life, I've been both of those folks, but I'm just curious what, if you have stories of how, as a doula, you've been able to be both the challenge and the comfort, for those kind of folks.
Yeah. You know, I think that that's probably why dealing with kind of both ends of that spectrum, and not wanting to kind of engage in the capitalistic idea of self-care, that's super classist and white supremacist and like not helpful at all. Mm-hmm. In order to break away from that, I think it's really helpful or important to put this inside the framework of a communal self-care.
Say more there.
So, you know, we have to do self-care in community. Mama Ruby Sales talks about this. She's a, you know, brilliant, well-known civil rights elder. She has an amazing podcast she did with Krista Tippett on Being.
Okay, yeah.
Recently. Actually, it may have been 6 months now, but everybody should go find it, listen to the extended version. It's so good. Mm. And she doesn't necessarily talk about it there, but in other conversations I've had with her, she talks about, you know, she critiques the way we do self-care and says that we need to do it together. And this is a woman who, you know, when asked about how they took care of themselves during the 60s civil rights movement, which she was a freedom rider at age 16, 17 years old, and was thrown in jail in a small southern town and left to rot there, and saw a friend of hers killed in front of her face, she said, we all had ulcers. We all just, you know, popped, Pepto all day long because we had ulcers. And, you know, and sometimes our elders don't, you know, tell us, okay, so now what you need to do is, but in telling me that story, I understood that she was saying, you know, you don't want that life. Like, don't learn from us. Mm. And, you know, and so what we have to do though, is do that all together. We have to, you know, that kind of went on because yes, it was an urgent moment, but because they weren't stopping to care for each other in that way. And then you hear these beautiful stories of the ways they did stop to care for each other, right? Yeah. Times when the ulcers were gone because they spent time eating together and talking together and laughing and joking. And so when you put those stories together, you're able to see that in those moments of communal care, which is more than just, okay, go away and get your manicure and come back. We often send people away. We isolate people further when they say that they're dealing with stress or burnout. So what does it look like to communally come together and do those things, have meals together, cook together, take care of one another's children, clean each other's houses together, you know, just make sure that we don't just send people away, but that we are providing the things that we need in our meetings, in our actions, before and after our actions, right? Are we having times where we can debrief and talk about it, where we can cry and celebrate together after we do some, you know, campaign together? You know, those are the things that aren't always included when we're planning something, but those are the kinds of things that we have to do, you know, as part of our, along with our practices of pausing beforehand and having a moment of silence or actually incorporating contemplation into our actions and into our meetings. You know, are we also spending time with one another, building those deep, loving relationships, you know, as a way to sustain?
So I'm reminded, sometimes the work we do at the Hive will talk about practices that are, how tempting it is to make practices a dissociative habit, where they're an escape. And then, you know, it's kind of like folks that take mindfulness classes in order to be faster salesmen that can work later into the night, you know, like, because it does work, right? You can short circuit jump your body to be able to do that sort of work for a period of time. And sometimes the folks we know in the, in movements that are progressive would be applying the same skill set to just getting their shit done. And so, what I hear you describing is that, it's integrative in a lot of ways. It's not, you have to bring all yourself to it, but then also that you have that contemplation is a communal practice, that the work of the midwifery of justice, or the doula work of justice, and seeing justice born is something that is a village process and not an individual all on their own with just a backpack full of their own practices.
And you know, part of that again is sitting with elders and being able to mine, you know, all their experiences and just talk to them about what they did to survive and thrive. Because I think sometimes they may have different words for what they did. They may not call it contemplative practice. They, you know, may not talk about it as community building, or, you know, use some of the same phrases we're using today. But we can actually see, you know, what they're doing, and we can replicate it. I tend to live my life by principles instead of by rules. So one of the principles of my life is a word called Sankofa. And Sankofa, it's represented by a bird that is reaching back to get it. Typically it's a bird, and you'll see an egg on the bird's back. And so it's, the neck is going backwards to grab the egg and
come
pull it
back for you, right?
Right. So it means essentially go back and fetch it, right? Yeah. And so I think we have to go back and fetch the wisdom of our elders and ancestors. And all of us and all of our ethnicities and race and traditions have those elders and can find those elders and ancestors. Again, they may not be living. They may not be someone we're directly related to. I have two women, a picture of two women on my iPad, Ella Baker and Fannie Lou Hamer, two women I never knew, but who are kind of, you know, mental mentors to me. And then when you can ask a question, you ask a question. You know, I was with Alice Walker last month and was able to ask her how she sustained, how did she heal while she was doing the work she was doing, when she was doing all of her writing, how did she heal and sustain and find space for herself in all of that time? And she really said two things. She said, she had a community of women that gathered in circle.
Okay.
There's this amazing picture floating around the internet that's basically like every badass black woman writer of the 70s was in this little group that they had.
No kidding. Wow. Yep.
And then the second thing was a community of faith practice. Mm. And I wasn't expecting that at all, but she has a Buddhist practice that she's had for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so there is this, you know, community of practice of people who have committed to one another. And, you know, she's known as this radical black feminist, and it's taught by a man, you know, but it's the community, it's the faith practice community that works for her.
Wow.
And so, you know, those two things, and it felt really good because that's essentially what I do with my life is do these circles, you know, these circles of community and faith practice communities. And I was just like, oh, I'm on the right track.
Well, yeah. How encouraging.
But, you know, it's not fancy. It's not, doesn't take a whole lot of funding or, you know, preparation or education. But what it does take is a commitment to one another, and we can all do that.
Yeah. That kind of stepping into a hurdle and accepting an invitation, to be in commitment to one another.
Yeah.
All right. So, before we take this break, Mickey, just tell us a little bit about the context of the practice we're going to share together, what it comes out of some of the work you're doing right now.
Sure. So I have been working on the idea of brave space and bringing that into our movement spaces and communities of faith. And so this really came out of a desire to see us move away from the idea of safe spaces, because safe space, I think, tries to promise us something that isn't possible. We cannot make sure it's always going to be safe. And for me, as a woman of color, even the safe spaces don't feel safe sometimes. So, and I don't think that's what we're called to as a follower of Jesus, in the Christian tradition. I don't think we're guaranteed safety. I think we're invited to be brave.
Mm. So even when it comes to things like triggers or a sense of like hospitality, there's a different ideal than just safety.
Right. Because we're going to mess up. Even the best of us are going to mess up. Mm. And while I think people who are marginalized should always be centered, and I think we should always do everything we can to make spaces hospitable, as you said, and inviting, and to bring equality and equity into our spaces, it's nearly impossible to check off every box to make sure everything has been said right. And for me, even as someone who is in deep relationship with people who are very different from me,
right,
there are times when I still misgender people who I know their pronouns and I say it wrong. Mm. There are times when I haven't taken into account someone's physical abilities and do something that is, you know, that can be considered disrespectful or harmful to them. And so how do I act in a way that's brave enough to admit that I did something that hurt them, whether I intended it or not?
Wow.
How can I deal with the emotions that come up for me that make me want to hide or tell something, you know, make an excuse and then keep going? And how do I also then create spaces where we are saying, yes, this is what, these are our values.
Wow.
And yes, we make room for us to all continue to grow. And I think that's how we're going to invite people into the party of movement and of faith-rooted movement, is that we have spaces that are welcoming, encouraging, affirming, and allow for messing up and for growth. Because often we feel like we have to get it all right in order to participate. And we need everybody on this train for justice. And the way we're going to get that is by creating a space where we can all be brave instead of ashamed.
There we go. So make mistakes as we go, but then develop a community of grace instead of one of shame that's just judging everybody into their corner.
Absolutely.
Powerful. Okay. Well, we'll take a break right now, and then I'll invite you just to kick us right off into that practice. Thank you.
Awesome.
Hey there, you've been listening to From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. I'm your host, Troy Bronsink, founder and director of The Hive, a center for contemplation, art, and action. We're a nonprofit located in the North Side neighborhood of Cincinnati. Our secret sauce is outfitting people to take up a daily practice through 6 to 8 week peer-to-peer groups and through events with luminaries in the arts and yoga, community building, spirituality, and more. You can check out our site, www.cincyhive.org. That's CINCYHIVE.org for more info on how to get involved. Well, we're back with Mickey Scott Bay Jones. Thank you so much for the conversation we've been having around the birthing process of justice and the way that contemplation and justice comes from within, but in community. So just thanks so much for this time, Mickey.
Absolutely. It's been great.
And now I'm just going to invite you to kind of sit back and, or I'm going to sit back and practice with you and invite you to guide us in one of your practices.
Awesome.
Thank you.
A meditation to cultivate brave space. Birthing more love, justice, and shalom into the world gives us the opportunity to create brave space within ourselves and our communities. Let's take a few moments now to breathe and explore that brave space that can be cultivated inside our hearts and minds and flow out into our communities. So take a moment to settle in wherever you are. You can begin to close your eyes or rest your gaze comfortably ahead of you on the floor. If you're sitting, you can place your feet flat on the floor, rest your hands comfortably in your lap, or recline back if you prefer. Shrug your shoulders, rolling them back, opening up your chest, allowing your shoulders to rest comfortably after moving them in a way that feels good. And by now, you may be noticing your breathing. You don't have to change it, just notice it. Where do you feel your breath? Notice as you breathe in. Notice as you breathe out. Welcome the breath into your body. Notice as you release it into the air. And as you take your next breath, you may want to slow it down and breathe in a little deeper, filling your belly, feeling it rise as you breathe in, and feeling it go as you breathe out. You can even place your hand on your belly and feel the breath enter your body and fill you up. And feel it leave again. The breath always returning. Now, as you breathe in, add a word. The word peace. And as you breathe out, exhale any tension you may still be holding in your body. Breathe in peace and breathe out the tension. Breathe in the peace of spirit, the peace of our connection, the peace that comes from bringing life into the world, despite any circumstances. On your next inhale, imagine all that peace entering your mind, your body, and your spirit. And hold it for a moment at the top of your breath. And as you exhale, think or quietly say to yourself, peace. And let your breath all the way out as you imagine more peace being let out into the world through your breath. And again, inhale, imagining peace filling your body, mind, and spirit. Hold for a moment and exhale. Peace. Continue breathing comfortably and gently, knowing that if your mind wanders during our time here, as it sometimes does, that's okay. You can always come back to the word peace and focus on your breathing. Bring to mind something that has stirred you to action recently. Something that has stirred the desire to bring more love, justice, or shalom into the world. Remember a time you joined a letter writing campaign, offered support to a nonviolent direct action, made your voice heard, or met with others in your community to unite across lines of difference. Breathe in that memory. Let it form so you can see it, so you can feel it. Now, allow the details to fade and focus in on how you felt. It doesn't matter so much who else was there or how many minutes you spent in one activity. Focus in on what you were feeling in your mind, spirit, and body. Perhaps there were a mix of emotions. You were angry. Did you feel fear? Was there joy in your spirit? Cautiousness in your chest, weariness in your soul, happiness from being with others in the struggle. Take a moment to breathe and feel and remember. Observing, feeling, experiencing. Not needing to judge, just observe, be curious. We bring these feelings and other thoughts and experiences with us into our efforts to birth more love, justice, and shalom into the world. We also experience them and others as we participate in meetings, actions, marches, workshops, and conversations. We create spaces of learning, acceptance, and community. And the truth is, these spaces, no matter how perfect and safe we try to make them, still exist in the real world. No matter our commitment to justice and love, our spaces may not always feel safe or be safe, yet they can, and we can, be brave. Begin now to welcome the complexity of who you are and what you feel as someone dedicated to bringing more love, justice, and shalom into the world. You are imperfect. You have multiple places where you are starting to understand more about others who are not like you. You are passionate. You are concerned. You are justice focused. And you will still mess up. You will reach up to lend your weight to bending the arc of the universe toward justice. And sometimes you will miss it, scratch it, elbow someone else as you reach up, or maybe even hurt yourself. You will not be perfect. Our spaces will not be perfect. No matter how many books you read, workshops you attend, or elders you sit under, the perfect activist, ally, or woke citizen is an illusion. But the good news is, you are invited to be brave. Brave. You can breathe in deeply now and picture what it looks like to be brave. Brave enough to start somewhere and continue to grow. Take a deep breath in now. And as you exhale deeply, consider how you can be brave enough to examine what you think you know, to be called to more truth, more love. And with your next inhale, expand your picture to see and imagine the individual and collective bravery of walking side by side, creating beloved community. When unpleasant emotions, accusations from the critical self, helpful yet painful critique from others, or even doubt of your worth or the worth of your contribution to the world's healing come up to the surface for you, bring yourself back to the breath. Quiet your mind and ask yourself where you might need to be called in. Called in to deeper understanding and self-reflection, where you can welcome greater wisdom and new learnings, where you are invited to be brave and speak, or to be brave and hold silence. To listen at the margins, to lead or to follow, to create more space, more brave healing, more restorative space. Take a deep breath and recommit yourself to the work of justice in the world. Commit yourself to finding your place in the struggle. as you continue to grow, to learn, to breathe in and rekindle your desire to understand the intersections of oppression and privileges you carry, while continuing to seek ways to do good in the world alongside others. Our movements for social justice must be birthed in love, justice, and shalom. The means will be the ends. So as we end our time here, take a deep breath and know that you can create brave space within yourself each day by welcoming your imperfect, compassionate self to the work of birthing more love, justice, and shalom into the world. Now take another deep cleansing breath and let it out, knowing that you can create brave spaces in your community, in your justice movement spaces, as you commit to calling one another to more truth and love, side by side. Return to a focus on your breathing, knowing that you are taking everything with you that you need from this meditation, and that you will open your eyes refreshed and fortified, moving along in your journey, strengthened for the struggle, wiggling your fingers and toes, shrugging your shoulders, rolling them back. Breathe deeply. And blink your eyes to open, welcoming the rest of your day.
It's been a joy to have this conversation with you, and then to pull it together in this way of recognizing compassion and courage and cultivating some space for that. So thanks so much.
You're welcome. It's been great.
Well, there'll be a lot of ways for folks to learn more about you from the show notes, different ways to follow up. We look forward to having more conversations sometime in the future. Thank you so much for joining us, and look forward to talking to you again soon, Mickey.
Great. Okay. Thanks so much.
You bet. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Well, I'm Troy Bronsink, and this has been From the Hive, a contemplative space where your meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. Today, we've been talking with Mickey Scott-Bade-Jones. You can check out the show notes for ways to connect to her work as a justice doula, her writing, and other things. Be on the lookout for pocket practices later next week. This will be a more usable, easy-to-share way to continue your practice. Take a deep breath and enjoy your day.